I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 15th, and we have a lot to talk about. It's MS Awareness Week, and my guest today is Marty Hines. Marty is a successful event producer, entrepreneur, film producer, and director. She was diagnosed with MS in 2018, and Marty's been very transparent in sharing the highs and lows of her MS journey. Like so many people living with MS, Marty has an amazing energy and what feels like an endless supply of resilience. I know you're going to enjoy meeting her. But before we get to my conversation with Marty Hines, there are a few other things that you should know about. While we're talking about MS Awareness Week, I think it's also important that we raise awareness about the lack of diversity in MS clinical trials. Someone recently asked me whether this was a case of hoping for better optics or wanting to be politically correct, and it isn't at all. This is a case of following the science. Evidence shows that compared to white people, black people with MS tend to experience a more severe disease course. Evidence shows that Hispanics living with MS experience a different disease course. And evidence shows that disease-modifying therapies don't have the same level of efficacy in these underserved populations. Evidence also clearly shows that the participants in clinical trials for disease-modifying therapies are overwhelmingly older white women. So if these underrepresented communities aren't participating in clinical trials, then the drug manufacturers come away from these trials with no real idea about the efficacy of their new medication on members of minority populations. In other words, equitable MS care requires more diverse clinical trials so that everyone benefits from new treatments. And the National MS Society has partnered with a number of its corporate partners in addressing this issue head-on. The MS Society's Corporate Healthcare Roundtable has created a consensus statement on health equity in clinical trials and real-world evidence data collection. This statement includes four principles designed to increase inclusivity and address health inequities in the healthcare system. And while these four principles directly address increasing diversity, they also stretch beyond that issue and take aim at other aspects of clinical trial design that are in need of improvement. Quoting directly from the statement, the first of the four principles declares that clinical trials and data collection should be patient-focused from the ideation of a clinical trial through real-world evidence data collection. This means including the prioritization of people affected by MS in the process of clinical trial design, development, and implementation, and recognizing the importance of representativeness. Trial participants want to know that the trial is for people like them. The second principle calls for each step of a clinical trial to be realistic and as inclusive as possible. It states that inclusive trials help to meet the goals of personalized healthcare, so both people and the healthcare system better understand which medication is right for each person with MS. The third principle in this statement on health equity in clinical trials states that effective clinical trial education from trusted sources is a pivotal component to bringing more diverse participants into clinical trials and data collection efforts. This principle calls for increased connections to and use of trusted sources, ambassadors, care partners, and peers in communicating information related to clinical trial education. The fourth principle recognizes that many people living with MS do not have access to or routinely see an MS specialist healthcare provider, and some are not regularly connected to any healthcare system. This means that outreach efforts and the sites of clinical trials themselves need to be rethought so they better align with underrepresented populations. This statement on health equity and clinical trials from the National MS Society Corporate Healthcare Roundtable lays out a set of concrete steps designed to correct a situation that, in its current state, contributes to a healthcare system which delivers subpar care to those people whose MS disease course may be among the most severe. And I think the healthcare companies that collectively produced this statement should be acknowledged. In addition to the National MS Society, this corporate roundtable includes representatives from Biogen, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Genentech, Greenwich Biosciences, Janssen, Optum, Novartis, Sanofi, and EMD Serono. If you'd like to review this statement on health equity in clinical trials and real-world evidence data collection, you'll find a link in today's show notes. One of the issues we discussed last week at the MS Society's Public Policy Conference was ensuring access to affordable prescription drugs. We've been having the conversation about prescription drug pricing in this country literally for decades. The reason that it's been such a long-running topic of concern is because the price that Americans pay for prescription drugs tends to be among the highest in the world, and the cost of these medications is simply more than many Americans can afford. No one should have to choose between paying rent or buying food and picking up their prescription. But that's a reality for too many people in this country. And I think one of the reasons that the issue of drug pricing has never been fully addressed is because there isn't enough transparency on the process of setting the price you pay for your prescription medications. I want to share a story with you about a relatively new business venture that's backed by billionaire Mark Cuban. This new business is the Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drug Company. It's an online pharmacy that sells generic drugs. The company's pricing policy is completely transparent. They take the cost of manufacturing the generic drug, add a 15% markup, plus any small fees that their manufacturing partners charge them for preparing the prescription for you. That's it. And while they don't yet have much in the way of MS disease-modifying therapies available, if you happen to take baclofen to manage MS-related spasticity, you'll pay $4.20 for 30 10-milligram tablets, and you'll pay $4.50 for 30 20-milligram tablets. You can also order baclofen in quantities of 60 or 90 tablets for a 2 or 3 month supply. And you can compare that $4.20 price to the regular $19.80 retail price for baclofen's generic equivalent. On the webpage about baclofen, the Cost Plus Drug Company shares that it costs them 90 cents to manufacture 30 10-milligram baclofen tablets. They also show that their 15% markup comes out to 30 cents. And then there's a $3 fee that they're charged for pharmacy labor, which they also disclose. Now, I'd like to compare that process to the way your prescription drugs are priced by insurance companies and pharmacies. But I can't, because the process isn't transparent, and the players in the process aren't even transparent. Pharmacy benefit managers are companies that we rarely hear about, but these are the companies that negotiate and manage prescription drug prices on behalf of health insurance companies, Medicare Part D drug plans, large employers who self-insure, and others. These are the companies that create the formularies of medications that are covered by your health insurance. And these pharmacy benefit managers negotiate huge rebates and discounts from drug manufacturers that you may or may not see because they operate in the shadows. Of course, the claim is that pharmacy benefit managers' ability to negotiate large rebates from manufacturers leads to lower drug prices. But that may or may not be true. We don't really know. And until we do, we can't simply point a finger at drug manufacturers as the culprits that continually raise the price of prescription drugs to the obscene levels they reach today. Now, I'm not trying to absolve anyone here, but until we get real transparency on how drugs are priced, how can we truly expect to have any sort of real and lasting impact on those prices? Imagine driving up to your mechanic saying, "There's something wrong with my car. Please fix it." Well, until your mechanic understands where the problem is, they can't begin to fix anything. So I guess I'm recommending two things here. First, we need to shine a bright light on all of the players involved in setting the prices for MS disease-modifying therapies, including generics. And second, I hope you pay an online visit to the Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drug Company. You'll find that link in today's show notes. And if you decide to check them out, you'll find baclofen, you'll find generics for several of the leading antidepressants, and perhaps other symptom management medications or other non-MS-specific prescription medications that you're currently taking. Compare their price to the price you're currently paying for your prescriptions. You'll also have an opportunity to request that they add drugs that they aren't yet carrying. Mark Cuban calls this company an example of humane capitalism. I call it a step in the right direction. Diet is always a popular topic on this podcast, and I always enjoy talking about the things you can start doing today, the lifestyle choices you can make that evidence shows will improve your quality of life. And today we're talking about the results of a small study that will be presented in a few weeks at the upcoming American Academy of Neurology annual meeting. I'll be bringing you all the news from that conference, but in this case, we don't have to wait. This study was conducted by researchers at the University of Virginia, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and Virginia Commonwealth University. It involved 65 people with relapsing remitting MS who followed a keto diet for 6 months. Participants limited their carbohydrate intake to 20 grams of carbs per day. That's fewer carbs than you'll find in a medium banana or apple. Meals were based on foods including eggs, meat, and fish, with servings of fats from olive oil, avocados, butter, or heavy cream, along with a few cups of leafy vegetables. 83% of the study participants stuck to the diet, and at the end of 6 months, their self-reported outcomes included significant improvements in their mental health, their physical health, including their MS symptoms, and they also lost weight. Specifically, the study participants reported improvement in mood and energy. They also reported experiencing slightly less disability and being better able to complete daily tasks like walking. And they reported losing body fat. Prior studies have also found keto diets potentially effective for treating other neurodegenerative disease like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. And the results of this study were comparable to a smaller pilot study led by the same principal investigator who led this study. So there's clearly more work ahead here. Hopefully a large study to determine whether a keto diet is beneficial for people living with MS. And when that happens, you can be sure we'll be talking about the results. If you'd like to review the results of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Whether we're talking about increasing diversity in clinical trials, accessing affordable prescription medication, or lifestyle changes that you can make to improve your quality of life, all of those advances and improvements happen because first, we raised awareness of what MS is and what living with MS is about. This is MS Awareness Week, and it's the 1 week during the year when everyone affected by MS can make a special effort to raise awareness of MS among your friends, family, colleagues, and others. The National MS Society amplifies the stories of people living with MS to raise awareness. You can find out more by visiting nationalmssociety.org/MS Awareness, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. Marty Hines is someone who believes it's important to raise awareness of MS to remind others who are experiencing the isolation that MS can bring that they aren't alone. Joining me in a moment is my guest, Marty Hines. Marty Hines is a successful event producer, entrepreneur, film producer, and director. She was diagnosed with MS in 2018, and Marty's been very transparent in sharing the highs and lows of her MS journey. Welcome to the podcast, Marty.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me, what was it that led up to your MS diagnosis in 2018?
Sure. My MS story or journey, I think, was pretty unique. I've heard a lot from, other folks with MS that when they got diagnosed, there was maybe a sense of relief that they felt because they had maybe been not feeling well for, sometimes years at a time, and doctors not really believing them, and, just really kind of, fighting to get that diagnosis. But for me, it really came out of nowhere. I had never been sick before, never been in the hospital before. And I woke up one morning paralyzed on the left side of my body. And it was terrifying. So it was a very kind of just fast paced, deep dive into this world that is MS that was pretty traumatic.
This is MS Awareness Week, and your story is one of the stories being featured by the National MS Society as part of MS Awareness Week. And as I mentioned a moment ago, you've been very open in sharing different aspects of your MS journey. What's important to you about sharing the story of your MS journey with others?
I think what's most important for me is just making sure that people, don't feel alone and feel that they are represented and that somewhere out there, someone's listening, and just really feeling that representation. I know that when I was first diagnosed, it was really hard for me to see folks like myself, when I was looking for just an example of, what people were going through. I'm a woman of color, and it was just not the representation that I was hoping for. So I really made it, a point to try to be that the best that I can, even in a small way.
Well, to your point, you and I both live in Southern California, but there are parts of the country where people, even doctors, still claim that MS is a white woman's disease. So as a Black woman who's living with MS, do you feel a greater sense of responsibility to raise awareness and make sure people understand that MS is an equal opportunity disease that doesn't play favorites?
I really do. I think it's so important, just in every aspect, of life, but, specifically with this disease, we have to make sure that doctors and researchers are including us in their studies and making sure to give us a role, asking us questions about how particular treatments are affecting people of color, because we are all different. And I think that making sure to give us a place and a space in these conversations is going to push us even closer to finding a cure.
What's the most challenging aspect of living with MS for you?
Wow, so many things but, I would probably say just the unpredictability of it. I am a very type A, on the go person, wants to do it all. I'm extremely passionate. And, before being diagnosed, there wasn't anything that really slowed me down or much that I took, the answer no to. And so MS has really forced me sometimes to take a seat. It doesn't always let me do everything that I want to do or show up in the way that, I normally would. And that can just be a very defeating feeling sometimes to feel like you don't have that control anymore.
MS is often called an invisible disease because for a lot of people who have been diagnosed, its symptoms aren't always visibly apparent. Now, I've heard you describe MS as an invisible disease that will betray you. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing with MS is, you're right, it is this invisible disease. It's not something that you necessarily have to share, right out of the break, depending on what your symptoms are. And it can sneak up on you. I've been in the middle of a business meeting or a speaking engagement, and all of a sudden, I'll start to have tremors or brain fog or dysranthia. And so then, folks are looking at you like, what's going on, or, you know, what happened? Because you look fine, you know, you don't look sick, as they say. And so it is an invisible illness, but it definitely can, again, the unpredictability of it, it can just kind of rear its head at the most inopportune moments.
Well, to that point, about a year and a half ago, you released a YouTube video around your decision to restart your dating life, putting aside the impact of a global pandemic on everyone's social life for a second.
Right.
How is that decision? How is that decision of restarting your dating life with MS? How's that worked for you?
You know, it was such a feeling state of, you know, fear and anxiety when talking about, you know, dating with MS. You know, when do you tell your partner, you know, do you say that on the first date? Do you wait longer? But then is that considered, you know, a lie of omission? You know, what happens if you get sick on the date? You know, what if they don't, what if they feel like you're going to be a burden? And so they pull away. So all of these things are kind of going through your head. And that's what really kept me from dating the first probably year and a half of my diagnosis, because I just didn't want to be that vulnerable. And, you know, through just therapy, getting more comfortable and more at peace with, you know, my new disease, it really, I realized that I have so much more to offer. You know, I'm not just my MS, which is, I know, what a lot of us say. And so it's kind of just like leaning into that and, you know, just being transparent and making it just another layer, you know, of who I am. And it's not something that I necessarily share, you know, at a particular time, you know, every time I go on a date. You know, it certainly is about feeling comfortable and feeling, you know, if I feel like someone really is worthy, you know, of that information, you know, about me. But so far it's been really good. It hasn't been, people have been so kind, maybe researching or Googling and, you know, mentioning to me on another date what they learned or asking questions. So it's actually been pretty fun.
Well, I think you probably just helped a lot of people who had the very same concerns and worries that you might have had initially. But I'm glad to hear it's worked out way better than you would have thought. That's great.
Me too.
So let me ask you, what's your advice, perhaps beyond just dating advice, what's your advice to someone who's just received their MS diagnosis and they've come across this podcast, they're listening to you? What do you have to say to them?
Just take your time. You know, it's such an overwhelming experience when you first get diagnosed. You know, it's very easy to let yourself kind of spiral into, you know, what's perceived to be those worst case scenarios that, you know, maybe you've read about or heard about. But it's really just taking your time to do the research, find a community, you know, find, you know, a network. I'm so grateful to have this world of social media where there's so many amazing MS warriors that talk about their symptoms or share side effects of medicine, you know, so that you can kind of do a more personal research than just a Google search, and just to give yourself grace, because, you know, your family and friends don't really know how to be there for you or what's really kind of going on. And so it can be frustrating. It can be terrifying. There's definitely, I think, times of denial. And so it's just, you know, taking your time and giving yourself grace, especially at the beginning.
I think that was such great advice. I'm going to let you give a little more advice if you don't mind, because you raised something in passing that I think is worth talking about for a moment. Let me ask you this. What sort of advice would you give the friends and family of someone who's just received their MS diagnosis?
It's so hard because, you know, your friends and your family, they just love you so much. And they are probably almost as scared as you are, you know, too, of what's going on. And it's also something that they really will never be able to ever kind of understand or comprehend. And so I think that if you are a friend or a loved one of someone that has MS, it's making sure that you acknowledge that you're probably never going to get it. you're probably never going to understand, you know, what your loved one is going through, but to really try to show up and be there for them, even when they might not ask. So, you know, it's the little things like just giving them, you know, a call or shooting them a text and saying like, hey, you're on my mind, wanted to send you, you know, some lunch today, or can I run an errand for you? Because you just never know when your friend that has MS is maybe having a bad day or a flare day and needs to rest. So, you know, just kind of offering that up, saying that you see them and listening when they want to vent. There's really not a way that you can solve it, but sometimes just being that listening ear and really taking it in, I think means the world.
Well, Marty Hines, thank you for all you do to raise awareness about MS and through your own energy and resilience, remind others living with MS that they aren't alone. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you, John, so much. I'm such a fan of your show.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/237. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. I want to give a special thanks to D. Larson 2020, Anthony DN, and Tay Gauchet for leaving a rating and review for this podcast last week. And if you have a spare minute, I'd like to invite you to add your rating and review as well. Just point your web browser at realtalkms.com/review, and you'll be able to choose where you want to leave that rating and review. The process is super easy and only takes a moment or two. So I hope you'll take a moment to leave a rating and review for Real Talk MS. And you'll find a link to do that in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.